This is the second of two evenings on the Brahma Viharas, the sublime abodes, or the various other translation of the term. And I'm not going to say too much about them because Naravira did a very good job of covering them last week. But I will just refresh our memories. So we have the four Brahma Viharas, the one that you're no doubt most familiar with, the loving kindness, or metta, as in the metta bhavana in Pali, Maitri in Sanskrit. And then the other one that Naravira talked about last week, compassion, or karuna, which is the same in Pali and Sanskrit. So this week we're going to be looking at sympathetic joy, mudita, and equanimity, upekkha or upeksha in Sanskrit. But in each case, each of these sublime abodes, at the ultimate, could be said to represent, in some senses, a godlike state or a particular level of consciousness. But it's important to bear in mind as well that it's not just a matter of a very pleasurable state of just sitting there blissed out, because it would also be imbued with wisdom. That's to say, an understanding of the true nature of existence and of ethics, of skillfulness. So let's look at sympathetic joy then, mudita. And on one hand, perhaps it could be thought to be the easiest thing in the world, such a natural thing to feel sympathetic joy. Somebody else is happy and you can feel happy in their happiness, and I'm sure we've all had some experience of that. But then on the other hand, we have things like Schadenfreude, which is that lovely German word for rejoicing in someone's misfortune. Similar to not rejoicing in someone's good fortune. And when I was young, I used to feel Schadenfreude, and so my friends might have some good fortune, maybe they'd be praised by a teacher or something like that, and I would not necessarily rejoice in their happiness. And I thought maybe I was a bit strange, and maybe I was a bit unusual, and perhaps I am. But when I heard that it was actually it was so commonplace that the Germans had a word for it, Schadenfreude. I didn't feel quite so strange, because obviously it wasn't just me. It was at least several million Germans as well. It's not really surprising, I suppose. It's likely to be born out of competitiveness, jealousy, or perhaps a sense of inferiority, that we need to defend ourselves. In some ways, it's quite natural. I see my two granddaughters, who are 5 and 3, and they're very competitive. And sometimes they rejoice in each other's good fortunes, but a lot of the time they don't. And they're quite glad when things don't work out for the other one. They're very jealous and competitive. But I think that's kind of the way things are, because siblings are competitive. So it means that we need to work on this. It's not just a natural thing. It's not necessarily the simplest thing in the world. When we feel envy or inferiority, or where we feel happy about somebody else's misfortune, it separates us from the other person. You are happy while the other suffers the misfortune. We can reflect that this is rather childish, really. a primitive emotion, and it's not actually beneficial to us. Why would it be, you know, why would we be happy that somebody else is unhappy? It doesn't really make a great deal of sense. It would make much more sense if we were happy when other people were happy too. But it does go to show that it's something that needs to be worked at. Our emotions just, they do arise, and but it depends upon conditions. And so we can work with those conditions. We can reflect on them, reflect on our emotions as they arise, and think about, well, this isn't actually helpful. Not to me or to other people, and gradually change them. So being separated out by this kind of unskillful response, when we contrast this with mudita, where we share others' joy, mudita arises where metta, loving kindness, meets happiness. It's a natural expression of that interaction between loving kindness and another's happiness. And surely this is a good thing, where not just the other person feels happy, but we feel happy too, that our happiness resonates within us. We are being brought together in that sense, rather than separated. Hence, there is an insight element to mudita, as it entails dissolving the boundaries between oneself and others. Ultimately seeing this view of self and other to be erroneous. But like metta, loving kindness, its development requires practice. And hence that's why we have the practice of the mudita bhavana, the development of sympathetic joy. So we're going to practice that right now. I'll just go through this particular exercise that we have. So it's very similar in many ways to the metta bhavana. So firstly, we develop loving kindness towards ourself, just like in the metta bhavana. Direct the loving kindness towards someone you think of as being particularly happy and joyful. Chris Agabusi, perhaps. Sorry, one for the kids there. Maybe they are enjoying good fortune or are just happy much of the time. Or maybe they're just happy at the moment. Maybe the sort of person that people think of as being a happy person. Or maybe just at the moment they seem happy. Maybe something's gone right for them and they're doing well. So in the second stage, we direct the loving kindness towards this particularly happy and joyful person. The metta will transform, ideally, into sympathetic, appreciative joy. In the third stage, we develop this feeling towards a good friend, and then to a neutral person, then to a difficult person. And on these occasions, we're dwelling on their good qualities and their happiness. So when the loving kindness comes into contact with their good qualities and their happiness, then hopefully sympathetic joy will arise. And then we equalize this feeling of sympathetic joy between oneself, the happy person, the friend, the neutral person, and the difficult person, and radiate the emotion out towards all living beings. So you could, well, I mean, one of the techniques that can be used during the metta bhavana is to recite little statements to try and engender loving kindness. And we can do similar with the mudita bhavana. So we could use little statements such as, I'm happy that you're happy. May your happiness last. May your happiness grow. May your happiness and good fortune radiate. So you could just repeat those terms periodically to help engender a sense of loving kindness. Sorry, sympathetic joy. So we've been meditating for, I think, about 30 minutes. So if you'd like to get comfortable and get into a meditation posture, and I will talk us through the practice. So allow yourself to repose in your meditation posture. The familiarity and comfort of a posture with which you're very familiar. Allowing, if you're able, any tension or stress to leave your body. And if it doesn't, well, not to worry. Feel gravity's force gently holding you onto the floor or the cushion or the seat, pulling your muscles and skin, hair. Allowing you to sit in comfort. And perhaps set the intention that should distractions arise, you'll endeavor to put them to one side and just return to the object of the meditation. Development of sympathetic, appreciative joy. Mudita Bhavna. So as with the metta bhavana first stage, become aware of yourself and your emotional experience, your mental state, how you are at the moment, for which of course there is no wrong or right. There is just the point at which you start the practice. And look for any ember of loving kindness, happiness, and see if you can allow it to grow. And if you can find no loving kindness, no joy, then imagine what it would be like. And as with always in these practices, we don't try to force our emotions, but gently try to encourage them in a skillful direction. So in the second stage, select somebody who is a happy person, happy at the moment or happy generally, and direct loving kindness toward them. And what then happens when the metta encounters happiness? So in the next stage, bring to mind a good friend. And like everyone, the good friend will have their ups and their downs. But for this practice, we focus on their ups, when they're happy, when they're joyful. So sending them loving kindness, which will hopefully be transformed into mudita when it encounters the friend's happiness. So putting together loving kindness and the happiness of your friend. And perhaps you may encounter some resistance. But you could perhaps reflect on the unhelpfulness of such unskillful emotions. And now we bring to mind a neutral person. Somebody we don't feel strongly about one way or the other. Which means that we may have less to work with. But all individuals have their ups and downs, have their moments of sadness and their moments of happiness. And so again, we focus on the inevitable happiness that this person will feel at times. And send your loving kindness to meet the happiness of the neutral person. You could bear in mind the little messages to recite. I'm happy that you're happy. May your happiness last. May your happiness grow. May your happiness and good fortune radiate. So now we bring to mind the difficult person, they too will experience happiness, joy, and unhappiness and sadness. And see if you can send them your loving kindness and try to generate some sympathetic joy at the happiness they feel. Even though you may have your difficulties. And if you find it difficult to generate sympathetic joy for the difficult person, imagine what it would be like if you could. How would that feel? And in the final stage, we imagine all those individuals together. yourself, the happy person, the friend, the neutral person, and the difficult person. And we try to equalize a sympathetic joy among them all. Ultimately trying to overcome the differences, the separation between these individuals, between self and other. And then allowing the mudita to gradually spread outwards so that it touches on all living beings everywhere. Rejoicing in the happiness of all living beings. And so we bring the practice to a close.